You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Having fun.
We're having fun today. This is such an exciting episode. I'm so
really
excited.
Is. This is a complete departure from what we're used to, but we have been looking forward to doing this for months.
Yeah, months.
Months.
I joked that we should write an episode or like a musical based on trying to put this particular episode together. This is a crossover episode of Theater Geeks Anonymous and
Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends.
Yay!
It took us forever. And it's our fault. It's not your fault at all.
Well, and even at the very last second, unfortunately, Kevin could not join us. So.
I know Kevin is listening,
oh,
but
good.
His loss. It's his loss.
We're in a professional studio with soundproof walls and everything.
There's an engineer. I'm already impressed. We don't have that.
I don't have to do any of the editing. I'm so thrilled.
That's amazing. This is so cool. So wait, where do you record from? Where is this?
My apartment.
Yeah.
Normally
yeah.
The apartment?
Yeah, normally her apartment.
With two dogs. And
what kind of dogs do you have?
Oh, I've got a little Maltese Yorkie mix named Sweet Pea. And he's a Cocker Spaniel, definitely, but maybe some sort of terrier there, too, named Puddle.
Puddle?
Yeah.
How did the name come up?
Do you know what? It wasn't me. That was the ASPCA, so I have no idea how he originally got
but
that
But house trained now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
oh,
great.
Yeah.
Maybe that's...
I mean, he eats everything he can get his mouth around.
Literally.
But yeah, no, he can hold,
no.
He can hold
toilet
it for
paper.
Hours and hours.
Oh, really?
Hours.
Yes.
Wow.
He likes toilet paper, any kind of napkin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Puddle is adventurous.
Oh, very. You should see it when he poops out a sock. It's really, it's really something.
You get rid of the sock, right? I hope.
Do you know what? Surprisingly, they're never mine.
Oh, that's really bizarre. Puddle has like this whole interesting life that we don't know about.
Maybe Puddle should have a podcast.
Hey, where's Puddle's podcast?
Stuff he finds.
Do you have any pets?
I do not.
No, you're no.
No, so if it comes to like we need to be sure that it's quiet, then we'll go to my place.
Yeah.
But this episode, I was like, not going to risk the dogs.
Yeah.
No.
Well, plus, yeah, I've got very little space in my little one, in my tiny, tiny one bedroom. So.
Oh, no, that's okay. You record anywhere.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You just
got to make it work.
You got to make it work. I know people who record in their closet.
Oh, yeah. No, that's super smart.
Yeah.
I have some voiceover friends that have closets that are specifically their voiceover closet.
Oh, and a tax write-off at the end of the year.
Absolutely.
Well, the lights just went off.
Mood
lighting.
It's hot.
Oh, okay.
It does. It gets super hot. We used this particular space last week for our episode too because we had another special guest.
Yeah.
But it got so hot that by the time this whole thing was over, it was like, I'm sweating. Are you guys sweating? Oh, I'm stuck to my chair. I'm not sure that I'm supposed to be stuck to the chair.
I sweat so much. So I'm just used to it now at this
I
point.
Know.
I'm like, whatever.
This is what it is.
This feels
it's
good
so
though.
True.
It's nice and cool in here.
Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah, yeah it's all right.
It's okay. Now that the light is off. It's
well,
yeah,
now
thank
we
you.
Should do our proper intro.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Welcome.
What's up, Theater Geeks?
What is up? Theater Geeks.
We're so excited.
We're
this
so
is going to be awesome.
Excited.
But I know you've heard
this.
Us. You've heard us already.
Yeah.
We are doing this crossover episode. It's kind of a surprise because we didn't tell you we were going to do it. We wanted to save it because we were just like, just so excited. I'm obsessed with this podcast.
Oh. Totally. Well, it's all things theater. Yeah. You guys talk to some of like my... absolute Broadway idols from when I was a little kid, so yeah. It's very hard yeah. not to squeeze.
Same here, especially when you meet them. It's
oh,
like,
I
grew up listening to you.
I have, you know, yeah. it's funny. I did Wicked. I did the national tour of Wicked. And right as I was leaving, Allison Fraser came in to take over Morrible. And she's one of those that I actually did act a bit like a geek. And I went up and I was like, I'm really sorry to do this to you, but I'm a huge fan. And she was so sweet.
Oh, we want her for the show so bad on our show.
Great.
We really want to get her.
She's
yeah.
always working. She's always doing
yeah,
something.
Yeah, that's why we can't get her. She's like, I'll totally do it, but I'm doing this show here and then that show there.
So
and you're
good.
Like, okay, great.
She's doing like Heartbreak House somewhere. I can't remember where. Where,
yes. Yeah.
Connecticut, maybe? Or
maybe. Yeah. Like she's that. Really talented, though.
She's so good.
So you did the Wicked National Tour?
I did.
Were you there with Christy Cates or
no.
Sarah Ford?
No. Those might have actually been on the other tour. There were two at the
yeah.
same time.
Yeah.
There was the Emerald City Tour, and then there was the Munchkinland Tour.
Ah, okay. Okay.
So depending. I was in it from, oh gosh. I mean, it's been ages, too. I feel like it's been like 5 years since I left. So it would have been 2012 to 2014, something like that, or maybe 11 to 13.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did you ever act?
No.
Not at all.
Not a professional actor. I've acted, but not professionally.
So you are a theater lover.
I love theater. I write, produce, and
okay.
now I'm directing.
Oh, yeah. So
yeah.
you're in the, yeah.
yeah
okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. That's so wonderful.
She won't sing, though. I can't get her to sing.
Why don't you sing?
I can't sing.
Well, neither can I. It doesn't
it's
stop
infectious.
Me.
It's infectious. I know.
But yours
like,
is
I'm
so much fun. Like, those the alter egos, it's like my favorite part of the episode. And I can, like, literally hear Kevin's rolling of eyes. Like, it's so loud. I can hear it.
Oh,
and
yes.
I'm like,
yes.
I love it.
Yeah. Thank you. I was just doing a show in Boston, and somebody mentioned to me, they're like, oh, I listened to it, and I really love the characters mm-hmm. you do. And I told that to Kevin.
Yeah.
And there was just dead silence on the other end of the phone. It's like, I'm sorry, Kevin. I tell Kevin, I'm like, you can come up with your own characters, and you can do them. I don't know if you're jealous. I can talk bad about him because he's not here. He's
of
not
course.
Here to defend himself.
You know what? It's his own fault.
Yeah. And just for your listeners to know, he's on a camping trip. He didn't delay or postpone
anything,
the camping trip
no,
for this.
No.
So
he should have.
I don't even think he likes
with
camping.
With all of the
I was like,
who does?
We're so low on the totem pole. He was like, oh, I'll just go in the woods instead of hanging out with them.
Oh, guys, I'm really sorry. I can't make it. I'm going to be camping.
He's a liar. He's sitting in his apartment
probably
right now.
Like down the street.
He's looking through his albums. He didn't want to be disturbed.
Amazing.
Well, on this episode, we are going to talk about shows
One night only.
I don't know.
Why don't
the words
you do
either.
That? Why don't you sing? Mm-mm. She's singing.
Well, that's because she can sing.
I try to get her to do it all the time. I can't.
So, wait, very quickly. Do you do karaoke?
No.
Have you ever wanted to do karaoke?
I've been dragged, and I don't enjoy it.
I was going to say,
you know what? I will say, though, I don't enjoy it either.
No, I don't enjoy it either. But I'm like, there has to be that like go-to karaoke song
yes.
if you have to do something.
No.
Do you sing in the shower?
I have roommates, so no. And one of my roommates, like, she used to be an actor, right? She's P.S. She's like our biggest cheerleader and so excited about this episode.
Thanks, Megan.
Thanks, Megan.
I made her listen to the episode where you guys were talking about Yanni and B. Arthur because it's like, I cried from laughing and I made her listen to it and she was like, oh my, I mean, she was on the train and people were staring at her.
Oh, that makes me so, happy. I was saying to Evan before we went on the air, like, you know, you put these things out here and
yeah.
you don't know who's listening,
yeah.
you know?
No.
Like like I said, I know my mom listens and even then I think she might be lying to me, you know? But it's nice to hear that people
yeah.
listen and
yeah.
Yeah, people love you.
It's
both
true.
As well, yeah.
Aw, thank you.
Yeah,
I don't get that. Nobody tells me on Facebook.
So
really?
Bitter.
No,
Facebook.
I take that back. There's one girl. Her name is Amber. Thank you, Amber.
Also,
thank
Megan,
Amber.
My roommate.
Oh, that's true too.
Yes.
But Amber, it's funny because she posted on Facebook on her wall and said, "I just heard the episode where you guys mentioned me. Thanks."
Oh, that's so
that's
cool.
Cute.
That's awesome.
That was really neat.
Have you started receiving gifts from listeners
no.
yet?
No.
But I will gladly give my address out.
I'm like, come. I'll come pick it up from your house directly. Don't worry about it. That's a big shining moment when that happens to you when you start to get some free stuff.
Because you all have gotten like cast recordings and things that you were looking for, right?
Yeah, things that were like, oh, I wish we could find that somewhere. All of a sudden, like next week, it's in our mailbox. And it usually goes to me. It never goes to Kevin. So I'm just like, I'm hoarding stuff.
But and then that you can hold it hostage until he actually invites you to his apartment.
Yeah, so Kevin and I have been very close friends for a number of years, and I have never stepped foot in the man's apartment. I don't know why that is. I don't know if he's ashamed or if he's afraid, like, I'm going to steal something from him.
I'm the exact opposite. I'm like, if you want to see me, you're going to have to come to my
apartment. Yeah, that's why we record every episode there.
I'm sort of the same way. I'm a homebody. I don't like to leave.
Me too.
I'm on a fifth floor walk up.
Oh, yeah.
So by the time I get up, I'm like, that's
it. You get
it.
Up, you can't go back
that's
again.
It.
Or
that's
if
it.
You leave your apartment, you'll never be able to get back in.
No.
I was on a
happen.
Fourth floor walk up for a while, and that was a lot. So fifth floor walk up, holy geez.
When I was looking for apartments after I got back from the Phantom Tour. I'm talking about all my credits here. I went through a broker, and he just took me around to all these apartments, and most of them were just really awful. But one of them we got to, and he goes, okay, it's fifth floor. And I was like, no, I don't even want to look at it.
Done.
No.
See, I was the same way with my broker, because he was like, we're going on the fifth floor. I'm like, no, we're not.
Mm-mm.
And he goes, it's rent stabilized. And I said, lead the way.
Okay.
I'm like, lead the way.
That's,
no.
That was
I'll carry you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rent stabilized, that's
then I'm like, yep, okay, I'll take it.
That's worth it.
Yeah. That was the only thing that, like,
and you liked it. So there you go.
I loved it. Yeah, perfect. I'm still there. I've been there about 5 years now.
Nice.
I like it. Kevin's there all the time, but I haven't been to his place. He's not on a walk up. I'm not bagging on you, Kevin. I love you, but... You're camping.
I've never even met you, and I'm like, oh, maybe I should. I don't know.
I'm just going to show up to his house randomly one night. That's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to knock on the door at 2 in the morning. He's afraid I'm going to steal his albums.
Do you think so?
I think that's it.
It sounds like he'd be up at 2 o'clock in the morning on YouTube watching from
Kevin and I like to Snapchat each other like at 2 a.m. Like, we just like hold the phone up to the TV and like, this is what I'm watching. What are you watching? And it's usually some like, it's like the Jerry Herman like Spectacular in Bolivia from 1994. And you're like, look at that. So that's our life.
Amazing.
It's a very exciting life.
Yeah, see, Ebony and I are of the same ilk that we'll watch like crime episodics.
Yeah.
I'm elbow
crime.
Deep in Midsummer Murders right now.
Oh, I love that.
Love it.
I
too.
Love true crime.
Yeah.
So wait, Midsummer Murders, did you watch Prime Suspect with Helen Mirren? Was that one that was on the list?
I haven't yet because it's not on
Netflix.
Well,
or Hulu.
Yeah, because I have that in Amazon Prime. Oh, I think it's on Amazon Prime, maybe.
Yes. So, okay. So you have Amazon Prime, but you don't have Amazon Prime.
I do have Amazon Prime, so I never think to look on Amazon Prime. Yeah. I always forget it's there.
Do you have an Apple TV?
I do.
Yeah, so it's automatically one of your little apps now on there. All of Unsolved Mysteries is on there. Like, not that crappy Dennis Farina ones. No offense to Dennis Farina.
No, I know.
The
like,
Robert Stack ones.
Because
the Robert Stack ones, I think, are the best. He was
so
creepy.
I was watching that stuff when I was a kid. I remember my cousin, she used, so I'm a weirdo. I love true crime, but I can't handle, like, horror films, right?
Okay, yeah.
Love
like,
horror
that's not
films.
My...
They make me laugh, though.
Like, horror films make you laugh?
The only one, like, Get Out, I love Get Out. Like, Get Out's awesome. But that's more like a thriller.
That's brilliant.
Oh,
Pamela. I know.
You can just come over because we have it.
Okay.
It's brilliant, yeah.
It's so good. So, like, that kind of stuff I can handle, but, like, gory, so I can't.
Mm. Oh, okay.
So she would be like, I don't understand how... She couldn't watch Unsolved Mysteries. Because that was, she was like,
was
Ebony, that's real.
It is scary.
I was
like,
I know, but I was like 11, loved it.
I know, me too. Yeah, me as too. A kid, I just, it's so good.
So all the seasons are on there, all the episodes are on
amazing.
There.
Amazing.
And it's all Robert Stack, not the Dennis Farina ones. Those are on
so
there too,
good.
I just don't watch those.
Yeah.
Because Robert Stack was so creepy to me.
Totally creepy.
Right?
Yeah, I love.
Well, and like,
Robert
now
Stack.
There's this one on ID. Okay, so my parents got DirecTV Now, which
ooh.
Is streaming, and so they gave me the password.
ID?
Oh, amazing.
I loved ID. Yeah. That's totally. All I used to watch.
This is all I'm watching. HGTV and ID. But I've been watching ID, and like, there's this show called Betrayed. And usually I'm not a big fan of the ones that have actors playing out the roles because sometimes it's just really cheesy. It makes me feel very uncomfortable.
Yep.
This one's actually pretty good. The actors are good, and it's voiceover, but it's in first person of the person that died.
Oh, I've seen
it's
this.
Really
yeah, this is good.
What's good.
What's it called
Betrayed.
Again? Betrayed. Okay.
Yeah.
And so, like, the voiceover will start, and it'll say, I'm a matriarch of a family, and I took care of my family. I'm very, very proud of my family. However, blah, blah, blah. And then it'll go, but then one day, I was murdered. murdered. And, you know, very,
she's
very
right.
much like.
I know exactly what you're talking about, Pamela.
I watched it today.
Yeah. I always, it's horrible because, like, on a Saturday morning, like, I'll turn on the TV and ID is usually the first channel. And it's usually, like, a Keith Morrison one from a Dateline. And I'm like, all right, I'll just watch this one. And then I'll go on about my day.
Then
and
then, it's like, all day.
Then 6 p.m.,
yes,
I'm like,
no, it's, so
it's just
hard.
Keith Morrison going, but why? Like, over and over again. That's my whole day.
Yeah.
Not a bad way to spend the day, though.
I know. No, when I had ID, that's what it was. It would just be, like, all weekend. Southern Fried Homicide.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
When there was it's Homicide Murder? Hunters.
Yes.
Homicide Hunter. Oh, Joe Kenda?
Joe Kenda. Yes. Yeah, he's Kenda. On Hulu.
He's got a good podcast. It's called Detective. He does the first season. It's all of his cases. It's on there. That's how I became acquainted with Joe Kenda, and now he's everywhere.
He's good.
Yeah, he's really good.
What's the podcast called again?
Detective. And there's two seasons
That's
right
what
now.
I'm starting to listen to tomorrow.
Okay, yeah, it's really good. And the second season's just as good, too. I can't remember who the detective is on that one though, but it's real. I love talking about real murders.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
No.
That's
true,
our
true
sweet
crime is...
our sweet spot on this show is like when it's like true crime with theater. It's like you can't.
Oh, oh okay.
That's
okay.
Like our
the whole
spot.
Episode of Rebecca because everything that went on behind the scenes there and is still going on because I'm pretty sure that woman is still not in jail.
Yeah. The man, you mean.
The woman.
Oh,
well,
his wife. Yeah.
His wife. But he went to jail finally, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But she was still, she was found
guilty.
She,
like, had a, she's, like, owns gyms or something on Long Island.
Oh. And she's a crook?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, they're the ones that defrauded Ben Sprecher.
Oh.
Yeah.
During the entire thing, which is why he wasn't able to fund the show, which is why the show never made it to Broadway.
Yeah.
I thought that you listened to our podcast.
That episode was probably like a year ago.
Yeah.
Be nice to
I missed that one. No, I think I missed that one. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'll go home and listen to
that
it.
That was the one that started this whole podcast because we got on the train. I told you like to Dumbo. And we were talking about Rebecca, and then I was talking about when I was a kid, my sister and I loved to Mystery Science Theater 3000, that movie.
Yeah.
And then she was like, well, you know what happened to the show? And I was like, what happened to the show? I don't know what happened to the show. And that's how this podcast started.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Then it was like later in the convo, I was like, I so want to do a podcast, but I just don't know what to do it about.
Yeah. See, look at that. It's good that you went to Dumbo together.
Definitely.
Yeah, Rebecca's got an interesting history.
Very.
Kevin was in Rebecca.
Was he?
Kevin was in Rebecca.
I had a couple of friends in it as well, which is where I got a lot of my source material, but they're anonymous. So we'll talk about that after the mic.
Oh, amazing.
And I auditioned for it too. So I made it to the callbacks, but it was like, so I felt like I was kind of in it.
Yeah.
And I wanted it to succeed so badly because it's such a good story.
Yeah. No, it's a really fantastic story. And all the productions shots from like the other productions looked amazing.
And oh my gosh, and it's all in German or maybe Austrian, but I think it's the German version of this, the woman that's playing, Mrs. Danvers.
Yeah.
I was like, what's her character? Singing Rebecca, the song title song Rebecca. And it's stunning. It is stunning. It's on YouTube.
It
okay.
But it's all in German, but it doesn't
German.
Even matter. The only word is Rebecca that you can understand.
That I understand.
It's so good.
When we did a Broadway Bound concert at 54 Below, and
that was the one Jill Pace was
yes,
at. I was at that
you
one.
You were at that one, and Jill sang from Rebecca.
It was so sad because she could barely talk about it. Yeah. She was so sad about it.
You know what? And that's across the board. Every cast member that I have talked to about it feels the exact same way. Everyone was so supportive of it, and they wanted it to succeed so badly.
Kevin said that, you know, they went into the rehearsal hall to be told, and like everything was taped out, and all the props were in the corner, and told, no, this isn't your playground anymore. It's just, I can't even imagine what that's like. But yeah,
And oh, no, I'm sorry. And to learn about it, because one of my friends said that he learned about it from the New York Post, article saying that it went. He was like, no, because we're starting rehearsals tomorrow, actually.
Yeah.
So,
and the marquee
was
up and everything. Yeah. Jill was saying that when this all went down, she went down to the river with her novel Rebecca and her script Rebecca and just threw them into the water.
That makes me want to
cry.
Oh, poor
Jill.
I
was just like,
Then
she sang beautifully. She sang a beautiful song from the show. Yeah,
she really
I really
did.
Like
Lovely.
Her. Yeah, she's great.
I saw her in something.
She was in Curtains. She was in Grey Gardens.
She wasn't in Sideshow, was she?
Yeah, I think she was.
Okay, I think I saw her on the side show.
I think that's right. I did see this last revival.
No.
It wasn't?
Aaron Davey.
Oh,
that's right.
Never mind. Jill.
I think Jill and Aaron, like, take over for each other a lot. I think that's why.
I know I heard her name in association with it, but I can't remember.
Yeah,
wasn't she tied? She was tied to something very recently, I thought, too.
Oh, yes. I can't remember what it was. She also did an American in Paris. That was the other thing that she was in.
Okay.
She works a lot, but there was something she was tied to, and I can't remember what it was.
Super recently that I read, and I was like,
lovely.
Yeah, I love her as a performer. She's really special. Yeah, she took over for Aaron and Curtains.
Okay.
Yeah, and when we did the Curtains concert at 54, she played the role.
I wish I had seen Curtains.
It was fun. It was fun. We had, for the critic, because, spoiler alert, the critic is the one who is the murderer.
Yeah.
So for our 7 o'clock, we had Michael Riedel play the critic.
That's why I wanted to go, because I was like, what?
Yeah,
I know.
First of all, he's an amazing actor, Michael.
Oh,
right. He's really good. He came in, he was off book, he was prepared,
nice.
He made choices.
He probably was like, this is all the things I wish actors would always do. Like, all the things he critiques about, he was like, let me not be a hypocrite and
he
come in.
He was awesome. And what was weird to me was, I forgot, because I know him from like Razzle Dazzle, and I know him from his column in The Post, and I just like him. I don't know what it is. I just really like him.
Theater talk.
Yeah. But then I remembered, like, I think I'm in the minority because everybody hates him because he destroyed so many shows. And so he's in the room with, like, a whole bunch of people that were in Seussical. And, like, he's doing scenes with people from Seussical, which totally destroyed. And I was like, why does this rehearsal feel weird to me? And I was like, oh, well, I'm having a good time. And then at our 9:30, we had Charles Isherwood. From the New York Times come in and play the critic.
Did they?
That was like right after that whole
right
weirdness.
After, yeah, that weirdness happened.
Was that their shtick? That they would always have an actual critic come in and play that?
Originally the role was John Bolton.
Okay.
From Anastasia and all that fun stuff. And John is brilliant. And John, we actually asked John, but he had Anastasia that night. And so he was, I can't do it. So I was like, well, who are we going to find? And I'm like, what if we actually got a real critic? So I sent an offer
so
to
fun.
Michael Riedel, and I sent an offer to Charles Isherwood at the same time. And I'm like, they're both going to say no, but at least I've asked.
I can't believe
and they both said yes.
Yeah,
and I was
amazing.
Like, oh, shoot. Okay, so one of you is doing 7 and one of you is doing 9:30.
So good.
Yeah, it was fun.
No, that's such
it was
a great
fun.
Idea, though.
The critic has no song in the show.
Okay.
It's just, it's all book scenes. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you don't have to sing.
Absolutely.
Nice and easy. But Michael was great. Yeah. And Charles was very nervous. It was very funny watching him on stage because he critiques everybody.
Yeah.
And he was just like sweating bullets.
I can only imagine turning it around.
Yeah.
That's right.
And being the one critiqued.
Exactly. But I applaud him because I'm like, good
Absolutely.
For you for like jumping
right.
into the deep end
Absolutely.
Of the pool. That's
right.
not easy.
No.
Well, because like, I wonder with them, it came to a point where you're like, well, listen, I've been critiquing people for all these many years and like, why wouldn't I at least like put myself in the fire if I'm going to, you know, demand that you all go be up to some sort of standard.
Yeah.
And then I'm just going to like be a chicken and not, you know, when it's presented.
I applaud him. I applaud him a lot. Yeah.
I wish I had seen at least one of those.
Oh, yeah.
That sounded like a brilliant idea.
Yeah. And kidding.
And I applaud Michael being in the same room with so many people whose shows he destroyed.
Yeah.
But
those were fresh wounds too. Some of those wounds were fresh.
I found him very charming, though. I found him very charming.
I loved his episode that you all did with him about his book.
Thank you. Yeah, the book Razzle Dazzle is just incredible. If you could ever picked it up, it's amazing.
It's about all of the shows that he has critiqued. Or
no,
what is
it's a retrospective of how Broadway came to be Broadway.
Oh,
it's real fascinating. And he sold the movie rights. I thought it would be cool as, you know, like The Men Who Built America, the History Channel.
Yes.
Like, I feel like the book would be cool as something sort of like that.
Yeah.
It's a real page turner.
Yeah.
I know that's so weird to say about a history book.
No,
and it's
but
about, it really is a page turner.
Nobody really knows the start
no.
of, you know, of arts.
No, exactly.
You know, you're like, I don't know, maybe ancient Greece?
Yeah, I know. The Greeks came to New York and...
They're all in Astoria. That's why it's Actoria.
That's what I love about coming to Astoria. There's so many great Greek restaurants around here. Yeah,
so
there's
true.
So many that I want to hit up.
The
yeah.
food trucks are the best, though.
That's what I hear. That's how Kevin keeps luring me over here.
I just think it's the most hysterical thing to walk by a food truck that has a skewer of lamb meat in it. Yeah. It doesn't make sense
to me. I saw that today. And sometimes it looks appetizing.
And sometimes I know. Not as much. Yeah.
But that's okay.
That's going to give me worms.
Yeah.
But are they the kind of worms that will help me lose weight? Or are they? Yeah.
I'll take it right now. Just give me the worm. You don't even have to give me the lamb. I'll take what I can get.
Well, I'll drink the tequila and you can have the worm.
Fantastic.
It's been a long day.
It's going to be good for everybody.
Oh, my gosh.
Good for everybody.
Oh, man.
All right. Well,
should we get into it?
Let's get into our one night onlys.
And I just have to point out, too, that you and I have notes.
Yes.
I've got the book, of course, the Ken Mandelbaum book.
Right.
I've got my iPad. You've got your iPad.
Yeah.
Nope, nothing here.
Because
Robin.
He's an inside.
Oh, no,
okay.
An index card.
Okay. But still, it's an index card.
Okay, but I'm going to see if I can do it without
the
index card.
Okay. We were so nervous because I was like, Pamela, they're like encyclopedias.
They're really sharp. They're going to come back at us very witty.
You got the wrong people. Yeah, I think you were looking for somebody else. It ain't us.
I mean, like, I'm just not a researcher. I'm not an academic. So I do the littlest amount of work
Good.
For the most amount of impact.
Good. That's
and
how I live the rest
I'm
of
like,
my life. Just how
it's know. I'm like hours and hours. It takes me way too long to do one show.
I may have done it.
It's
this
like
morning.
Fun. It's fun though.
It
like
is
I actually
fun.
Love doing
you like the
all
research
the research.
Absolutely.
Of it, yeah.
Because
looking it up.
I just feel like I'm back, you know, in high school and just like diving into because during the week like I have to be at a job like a grown up but then like this show makes it so that I can just be like a theater geek totally obsessed talking about stuff nobody but me cares about and
no I love research I love it I think Kevin researches more than I do
okay
so I think you and Kevin are
I
on the
can
same
appreciate
train.
That Ebony is the researcher because I like to ask questions
she does
and she always knows the answer
and if I don't I'm like well I'll find out
and I always say I don't know, maybe this. I'll make it up on the spot. I'm very good at that.
Yes, as long as you say it with authority, nobody
That's
questions
what I say.
It.
Yeah. Say it with confidence and it must be true.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's how I do most of the episodes.
Yes.
But, Kevin's like you. Kevin, dives in and has looked at 90 different books. And I'm like, I think I remember somebody once saying this.
Yeah.
So it's fact now.
I couldn't find it again when I looked, but I'm fairly certain that.
But I have to be careful now because I don't know if you have this. I have, like, listeners who will angrily tweet at us or send me an email being like...
No, they haven't done that.
Like, it did not open on December 6th. It opened on December 7th.
Oh, dear.
And you're like, nobody died. Like, everybody calm down.
I think we actually will say... Well, I will, at least, because I'll say, look, this is all from Wikipedia, so if you guys know something I don't know, just let us know. Mm.
Yeah. We do always leave that window open. Like, I mean, I have multiple sources, but, we don't know everything, so...
Yeah.
For instance, too, it's like when I was looking online for the show that I'm going to be doing, I found the same exact phrasing on all of these different websites. And it was like, what is it one person writing everything? And there was very little about the episode that I've got.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
I know. I was a little bit bummed about
That's
that.
That's surprising.
It's a show that I actually would love to learn and sing at least a couple of songs from.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. But you found the same quote just being recycled.
Yeah, not even quote. It was like the synopsis was almost word for word on every source that I looked at.
That's interesting. I wonder why that is.
That's weird.
What year was your show?
69.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. We'll dive into it. We'll figure that out.
We will.
We will.
Well, Rob, since you're our guest and you have two shows.
I picked up the slack for Kevin. Kevin, you owe me,
buddy. He owes you. You want to just do one of the shows and then we'll go around and then we'll end with you on the last show.
Oh, gosh.
That's fun.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. But you see, look, I have notes. But I'm going to see if I don't look at them. Okay, great. So the show that I'm doing is called A Broadway Musical. It is a Broadway musical that is actually called a Broadway musical. And this was
so clever.
One performance, because that's our role, one night only.
One night only.
That's it. Sing it. The one night was December 21st, 1978 at the L'Enfantin Theater, and then that was it, that it went away. So for those of you who don't know Broadway musical, it is a musical by Charles Strauss and Lee Adams, who also did...
Grandpa Charlie.
Yeah.
That's God, what we started him. Calling him.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you met him? Have
no.
you gotten a chance to... Oh, he's awesome.
I bet.
He's really awesome. And
we call him that because every account of him says that he's just charming and wonderful and fatherly. And
oh, yeah. That's absolutely correct. There's like, you cannot disparage that man at all. He is awesome. When we went to it, because we interviewed him on the podcast, he sat down and talked to us for about 3 hours. And then after the 3 hours, he's like, okay, guys, he's like, I'm having a good time, but you need to go because I got to get work done.
Oh.
And he had a work list at his piano of like songs he wanted to write and things he needed.
Because he's working on another musical, right?
Yeah. And I'm just like,
any idea what that is?
No, I don't know what that is. But I'm like 90 years old and still working.
So good for you.
Like, good for you, man. I'm going to just, sit here in the corner. And
I'm losing my steam, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not even 40 yet.
He is fantastic. So it was Grandpa Charlie who wrote the music, and Lee Adams wrote music and lyrics. They did also Bye Bye Birdie, and they also did Applause and all that stuff. Right. And this was Charles's first show after Annie. And he and Lee hadn't worked together in a while because Charles had hooked up with Martin Sharnan for Annie. So it'll come out tomorrow. and the book was by a guy named William F. Brown, who wrote the book to The Wiz.
Okay.
And so these three guys were white, and they all were like, this is really interesting. William just had a huge success with The Wiz, which is an all-African-American cast. Mm-hmm. And Charles and Lee had done Golden Boy with Sammy Davis Jr. in the 60s. Yeah. And they were like, we were white guys writing for an African-American character. So they actually decided to write a satire about that. What it was like, and it was a very dark satire originally, and very cynical satire about how the industry has a tendency to misuse African American performers and keep them.
The industry doesn't do that.
This is all fiction. All fiction.
And if only.
And how to keep that. So it was it was making fun of the stereotype of white people trying to like celebrate black people, but in a totally inappropriate way.
Yeah, in a self-centered and
completely. There was not one group that didn't get skewered in this show, from producers to directors. The character who's the leading person in this Broadway musical is based on Sammy Davis Jr.
Okay.
So very like Vegas-y and show busy. And so the story was, it's a white producer who is desperate for a hit, and with all the successes of things like Ain't Misbehavin' and The Wiz and Bubblin' Brown Sugar, decides he's going to turn an African American play into a big Broadway musical.
Okay.
And it's all about a playwright who has come from the Midwest and starts to lose his identity as he realizes his play is being just like slowly taken away from him.
Yeah.
It was done at this is where their out of town was for this. Ready? We were out of town.
Okay.
Theater at Riverside Church.
Stop.
Literally just a few blocks away from Broadway is where the out of town happened.
That's kind of amazing.
Yeah. And it got horrible reviews.
Yeah.
And in like a cringeworthy moment.
Yeah.
The original director was a guy named George Faison, who was African American, and the producers fired him and replaced him with white Gower Champion.
Oh,
so
no!
it was almost like what was going on in the musical was living in life. And Gower Champion came in and he was like, hey, listen, guys. He goes, I know this is dark and I know this is cynical. He goes, I've done a lot of shows like that recently and they've all flopped. He goes, what I'm really good at is like razzmatazz and sequins and sparkles. So we're going to make this razzmatazzy and sequiny and sparkly.
Yeah.
And so the whole show just like totally lost its whole message.
Oh, man.
And so if you go to the New York Public Library and you read what was done in previews, like in the out of town tryout, it's not even out of town tryout, it's like out of block tryout, versus what was on Broadway, two totally different shows.
Yeah.
And I prefer the darker, cynical one.
I mean, it was literally how to whitewash a show about whitewashing.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's exactly what it was. Now, what's on, and Strauss and Adams, I think, just all like sat there and were like, well, what can we do, guys? Like, there's really nothing that we can do at this point. So it only lasted one night. It got really bad reviews.
Yeah. But the reviews were also bad for the original concept, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Except that they said there's promise here, that there's potential here. And it just never lived up to the potential.
Because it sounds, I mean, the way that you describe it, it sounds like a kind of a neat idea for a show.
It's very satirical. Yeah. It's very, very satirical. And when it's played as a satire, I think it works effectively.
Yeah.
What happened was when it moved to Broadway, it tried to have like a heart behind it. Mm. But then who are you rooting for? You're rooting for this sleazy producer who's just using an African-American person just to get ahead financially.
Yeah.
So there's really nobody to latch on to. Now, you said you like true crime, right?
Love.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
What goes on behind the scenes with a Broadway musical is more interesting than what was actually on stage with a Broadway musical.
So I'm on the edge of my seat.
Okay, so here we go. So one of the producers was Garth Drabinsky, who, as we know, much later on in life, was sent to jail.
No, not Troika. What was it?
Not Networks.
Networks.
Was it Networks? Was that him?
I think so. It was the Canadian.
Livened.
Yes,
that's
yes,
it.
Yes.
So as we all know, Garth Drabinsky went to jail. Okay, yeah. So we have that's already not a good omen. But here's the next one. Okay, so there was another producer, and his name was Norman Keene. And Norman Keene had a wife named Gwyda Don Howe. Now that's a name, Gwyda Don Howe. That's his wife, who was an actress. And so Norman said, well, if I'm going to produce Broadway musical, my wife is going to be playing the lead of the show.
Uh-huh.
So Gwyda, who was the real producer's wife in the show, played the producer's wife.
Oh, no.
All right. Go on with that, right? But this is where it gets true crimey.
Okay.
10 years later, she was cheating on him.
Uh-oh.
And so one day he came home. He killed her.
Oh, my gosh.
And then he killed himself.
No!
And so the only thing that people, like, remember now when you mention a Broadway musical is you're like, oh, well, you know the story about Norman Keene, don't you?
Wow.
And then they go into the whole story of how he, you know, found out his wife was cheating on him, and he killed her and killed himself in this, like, murder-suicide. And that was about 10 years after the Broadway musical happened. So, unfortunately, that's how, when you say Broadway musical now to, like, theater insiders, that's normally the story that comes out of it. I'm happy to say that the but the score had never been recorded.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, it just never went anywhere.
Yeah.
So we, about a year and a half, I think, or 2 years ago, at 54 Below, we asked Charles and Lee, can we do it for one night only?
Mm-hmm.
At one night only.
One night only.
Cue music.
I'm just gonna do it in a different key.
That's good. Just modulate as we go. Can we do it at 54 Below? And we did, and we recorded it. And so the entire score is on YouTube now. It's not audio clips, but it's video clips. So this last, I think that's so important because
absolutely.
You know what Charles and Lee have contributed to the American musical theater is so monumental, and to have not have one of their works preserved for future generations, because this is not licensed at all for rights. There was no score that was published. There was no cast album that was ever made.
Yeah.
But if you can go on YouTube now, you can hear the whole score.
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting.
And it's actually, I think there's a lot of fun stuff in the score.
Yeah.
The title song, I think, is, if you love musical theater, you're going to love this.
Yeah.
So that was mine. It was a Broadway musical from 1978, one performance only, a satire that became a satire.
Yeah. Oh, man. And true crime.
So
and
then
true
I'm crime. Thinking, because you said when he did that, when he was doing this show, he was like, I've done a bunch of other darker shows that haven't been successful. Mm-hmm. And so Pretty Bell was one of those shows.
Yes.
We just talked about.
It was, he had Pretty Bell. He had done Mac and Mabel, which even though there's lightness because it's Jerry Herman, was a very dark story.
Yeah.
I think he had just done Rockabye Hamlet, which was the rock version of Hamlet, which is a whole other story that we won't even get into now.
It's on one of our lists.
Oh, really? Okay, great. So, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So, unfortunately, and I think one of the actors who was in the original was telling me that, like, I think at Tech he was watching the show and is like, I really screwed this up. Because he made the material twist to suit him as opposed to going to the material.
It's such a shame when that happens, too, especially, like, in hindsight, the person that was responsible for or one part of the failure is like, oh, I guess I shouldn't have really done that. Because then it's like, I know. It's so easy for us, though, too, because we, you know, we have all the information. We're looking back at it and going, well, you didn't have tryouts, or you did have tryouts, but then you changed a bunch of stuff and you went to Broadway right away. And it's like, you know, these are mistakes that happen over and over and over again, and it's so frustrating.
Yeah, it's very, very frustrating. Yeah. So I don't know if the show's going to have a lot. I don't think it will have a life again unless they bring in a new book writer who can really get back to the satirical edge of everything.
Because it sounds like if that happened, it would be quite perfect for the time we're living in right now. Yeah. Where, yeah. I mean, that's just happening so often.
Oh, absolutely. Who wrote the book for Scottsboro Boys?
I think David Thompson.
Maybe. I mean, like a guy like him, I think he'd be able to kind of
find a way into it. Yeah.
Because it is a good story.
I think it's a really interesting story. Mm-hmm. And I think if it's done right, it's funny. When we did it at 54, we streamlined what was done originally and some elements of what was done on Broadway. And I know what we came up with, Charles was incredibly happy with. But I don't think it's going to be a show that ever gets licensed because you would actually need somebody who has the time to dedicate to fixing it. But I said, the score, I think, is lovely.
Great.
And it's available on YouTube for people to take a listen to.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
That's mine.
Yay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do you want to go next, Pamela?
You go for it. And while you're going, I'm going to open up my iPad and get everything ready.
Okay, so mine is going to be the show Heathen with an exclamation point. I first heard about this show with Bruce, actually, because he told the story of how Bruce Yecko was on our podcast, and he was also on Behind the Curtain. And he told the story of, him rushing back to, try to see the show. And that was hilarious. So he actually got to see the one performance before the show closed. And if you want to listen to that whole story, it is on our episode. So Heathen was a musical written by Eaton Bob Magoon Jr.
That's a name.
Yeah, isn't it?
I've never heard of this show.
You haven't heard of Heathen?
No. This is all going to be new to me.
Yeah. Okay.
It's fun.
And it's not even Magoon's first show on Broadway. It's the second show on Broadway. His first was 13 Daughters, which ran on Broadway for 28 performances, which is obviously more than Heathen. And Don Ameche was the star in 13 Daughters.
Yes, he was.
Yes.
Good old Don Ameche.
Heathen was written in 1968 under the title Thank God for the Heathen.
Why do they think that they need such a long title for
these
shows?
I don't know. It premiered at a college in Honolulu called, I'm sorry, anyone who's from Hawaii, I may butcher this, Punahou School. So it's spelled Punahou.
So Out of Town was in Hawaii.
Yes.
That's really out of town.
Yeah. Because that's where Eaton is from.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Eaton is from Hawaii. So Heathen, I'll get into the story, but
yes,
I mean,
don't
it's
interrupt
based...
her.
I'm sorry, no, I have so many questions.
it's born out of his culture, this story. Okay. So after
like Moana.
Yes. Well, if this were good. Because Moana is wonderful.
It's
I
so
love
good.
That movie.
Me too.
After its premiere at the Punahou School, Magoon asked Sir Robert Helpman, a beloved Australian dancer, choreographer, actor, and director, to help him with the book. Helpman is famous for being the child catcher in the film version of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Oh!
Yes. Mm-hmm. Magoon's family was one of the richest families in Hawaii, and it was through their financing that he was able to bring Heathen and 13 Daughters to Broadway. He also enlisted the help of producers Leonard J. Goldberg and Ken Gaston. And I looked up their other credits, and those didn't go so well either.
What else did they do?
I would have to go back and look, because now I can't remember. But
nothing big. Nothing,
no,
okay.
No, I mean, they produced everything else they produced was together. They both did it. But, I mean, it would be either one night or last a month.
Oh.
Okay.
Well, a month is pretty good. if you're looking at that aura, one night only.
Yeah, I guess that's true. So the Heathen synopsis is Reverend Jonathan Beacon attempts to bring Christianity to Hawaii in 1819. While doing his missionary work, he butts heads with Chieftain... I'm sorry. Manolai?
It's pretty phonetic.
Is it? Manoula.
Yeah.
Okay. they butted heads because Reverend Beacon did not honor their culture as he saw their state of dress as immodest.
Oh.
And that a sign of holiness was to wear more clothing. So that's basically what it came down to. He was trying to completely change them.
Don't
their
worry
culture.
About the Bible. Don't worry about Jesus Christ. Just put on a shirt.
Put on some clothes. This is not okay.
Was that a musical number?
I'll tell you what the musical numbers are. They are okay. So the musical vacillated between 1819 Hawaii and 1972 Hawaii. And the 1972 timing, the characters play their descendants, right? So you have Reverend Beacon and Chieftain Manoʻula, mm-hmm. right?
Okay. I'm going to say yes.
and the woman they're both in love with, Kalialani. Okay. Kalialani.
That sounds right.
Okay. Yeah. And so...
Kalima.
Has anyone watched Indiana Jones?
Oh, it's been a minute.
Yes.
Like a few minutes it's been.
Very good.
Thank you, Pamela.
In the 1972 version, Reverend Beacon is a hippie. Manoʻula is named Mano, and he lives on the mainland. And both men are still vying for the affections of Kalialani, whose name is Kalia.
Okay.
So it's like, yeah. Hmm. He even began previews on May 13th, 1972, and it opened on May 21st, 1972. To unanimously bad reviews. I mean, one person said that heathen was our punishment.
For what?
He literally said we've done something wrong. That's what the review said. The review said we've done something wrong and this is our punishment.
Can you imagine if a Charles Isherwood?
I mean, that was probably the most scathing thing that we've ever read.
That's your pull quote.
That's what's this on top of all punishment. The taxis. Oh, man.
Holy jeez. And it closed on May 21st, 1972. So it opened and closed the same night. Mm-hmm. The cast for this was Yolande Bavan. She played Kalialani as well. Same person. And then Mokihana?
Sure.
Played Alika. Now, Alika was sort of like a narrator-type person. So they tried to rewrite the book to try to, like, fix it. And it's out there now. Oh. It's out there, and it's being done. It was done in New Zealand and Hawaii.
Wow.
Under this new title.
Who's doing this?
New Zealand and Hawaii, they're doing it.
And Guantanamo Bay.
They took torture out of Guantanamo Bay.
They were fine with waterboarding, but when it got to heathen.
Well, heathen, they were like, that's where we have to draw a line.
Humane. UN got involved.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUPS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUPSmusical.com.
Holy mackerel. And so I'll just skip to in the quote-unquote, they call it a revival. In the rewrites, Alika, so there's a volcano, and she is able to, like, talk to this volcano. And when the volcano wants to erupt, she's able to give it a good talking to and get it to stop erupting.
Oh, dear.
What? I've never
Sounds
heard
like
of
this
show.
Sounds like a really bad children's show.
So I have to, is this like a joke?
No,
like I have to guess which one of these is like the real musical and which one isn't?
No, it's real, Rob.
This is real. Okay. I hate to interrupt. Is there a recording of it?
Yes. There's a
We are gobsmacked over here.
Yes. Okay, so... let me just finish.
Yes,
I want to finish the people who
are
in it.
I have so many
questions. I'm sorry. All the time. I do it all the time to her.
I'm just going
to
wait.
Edward Rambo played Mano, and then Russ Thacker played Reverend Jonathan Beaker. Christopher Barrett played policeman and church elder. And sadly, like, One of the things I read about Russ Thacker is he was never really in a show that was successful.
Yeah. Mm.
He did a lot of theater, but it was just like every single time he did one, it just wasn't. And by all accounts, I mean, he was quite talented. So it's like just like really sad, sad story. The creative team orchestrations were by Larry Fallon. It was directed by Lucia Victor. Choreography was Sammy Bays. Scenic design, Jack Brown, and costume design, Bruce Harrow. What were you going
to
say?
No, Lucia Victor, I think, was Gower Champion's assistant and used to remount all the Hello Dolly. So that was a name. Oh, wow. This is so interesting to me.
Yeah.
And what year was it? 72? No.
Yep. That's 72. Right. 1972.
Listening to these stories, that's actually part of the fun is finding these little treasure, you know, like little Easter eggs. Oh, wait, I know that name. Wait, how do I know that name? Yeah.
Heathen, okay.
Heathen with an exclamation point.
But you said there's a recording out there.
Yes. So a few years after it closed on Broadway, Heathen went through a number of rewrites. Cy Coleman was brought in to do some new arrangements.
Wow.
And the show was renamed Aloha, the Spectacular New Musical. I can't believe I'm dumbfounding Rob Schneider.
I've never heard this show. Heathen or Aloha.
Aloha, the spectacular new musical.
Wow.
9 songs from Heathen were kept, and these include My Sweet Tomorrow, Heathen, exclamation point, This Is Someone I Could Love, No Way in Hell, House of Grass, Christianity, Better More Go Easy, Eighth Day, and Aloha, Lord.
Huh.
5 new songs were written, and those are called Suffer, Sometimes It Rains, Fire and Brimstone, I Hear Hawaii, Glory Be, Lay of the Memories.
Okay.
If Jen Tepper is listening, Jen, do you know this show?
She has to.
Jen's got to know.
She's a trove of knowledge.
Jen, help me, Jen. I don't know this one.
I had never heard of it either.
The story kept all the characters in 1819. Instead of moving them, vacillating
I
between
like
1819 and 1970.
I feel like whenever you do that in a musical, it changes, you know, dates or like, you know, go from contemporary to past. It's like it just never works. The audience is confused.
Yeah.
The show is muddled. Just don't do it.
And that was a big complaint by a lot of critics was they just felt like it was confusing. The book was very confusing.
Yeah. I think the only time it worked, and here's a Cy Coleman reference, was City of Angels. But that was only because they made it so perfectly clear that the film noir is black and white and everything else is in color. Right. So it was a very definitive difference.
Right. Yeah, you have to be very, sharp, very clear when you're doing it on the stage. The show was produced in New Zealand and Hawaii, like I said, and a cast recording was created with the members of the Aloha cast. So the Aloha, like I said, the Aloha,
the coming,
spectacular,
the second coming.
And I did see it. So like, I think it was on like Amazon, probably. It was on Amazon
to buy an album. Okay.
Yeah, but you have to type in Aloha, the Spectacular New Musical. It wouldn't be called Heathen anymore.
Okay.
If you want the cast recording.
Did Bruce Yeko produce this?
No.
Oh,
that would
okay.
be a good. I mean, that would make sense if he.
But
did,
you and Bruce were talking about it, is what? Is that what?
Yeah. Okay. So he heard like it was coming, and the guy had done 13 Daughters, and so he heard Heathen was coming. He and his wife, he wanted to get a ticket. They got like a last minute ticket. They were like coming back from some trip or something. They just got in like on that one performance night and saw it, and he was like, holy geez, what is this thing? It was not great.
Oh.
But he talks about it on our episode, because I was like, can you please tell me the Heathen story again? Because he had told it to me over the phone. And then I was like, when you come on, I need you to tell it. He didn't produce the cast recording, but he did get to see it.
Yeah. Hey, that's so interesting. He's such a cool guy. Okay,
yeah,
so
he's a cool guy.
Now I know what I'm going to buy tonight. Unless somebody has an album I can borrow. Maybe it's in Kevin's collection.
Maybe. Let's just go break into his apartment
since they're not there and they live down the street.
He's not gonna know.
No.
Let's all tiptoe right now. Across Astoria. So the episode I'm doing today is Estrada.
Oh, yes.
I was super excited about this. But like I said, there's no information online. So I'm just going to tell you what I do know. Starting with the fact that it's a musical.
That helps.
Lyrics and music were by Lionel Bart, with additional lyrics by Martin Sharnan. And additional music was by Elliot Lawrence. It is based on a 1954 film of the same name by Federico Fellini. Bart wrote the score in 1967 and made a demo. This is what's funny about this. It says, and made a demonstration recording. Oh. And I went, demonstration recording? What is that? Oh, a demo. He made a demo of it, although the musical was not produced until 1969, when it was famously canceled after just one night only. The musical's book was written by Charles K. Peck Jr., who also produced it on Broadway. So, just to give you a little background on Federico Fellini, he's like this major filmmaker, yeah. But it's like all of these kind of artsy people like him. I had never really watched anything, but I had always heard his name growing up. So he was an Italian film director and screenwriter known for a very distinct style that blends fantasy with Baroque images and earthiness. He's recognized as one of being the, you know, the greatest and most influential filmmakers of all time. Films have been ranked as some of the greatest films of all time. And in a career that spanned almost 50 years, Fellini won so many awards. He was nominated for 12 Academy Awards for La Dolce Vita. It won Oscars in the category of Best Foreign Language Film. And in 1993, he was awarded an honorary Oscar for Lifetime Achievement. And that actually happens to be also the year that he passed away. So that was crazy. One of the last kind of things that he was able to really accept and appreciate before he passed. So the plot summary of La Strada is, okay. So the play follows the story of a film, of the film of the same name. Gelsomina is a young girl who is sold into basically servanthood by her mother to a brutish circus strongman named Zampano. It might be Zampano, but I'm not going to say it like that. To be his assistant. So she shows her abilities as a clown and soon becomes the star of the show. She falls in love with Zampano despite his abuse of her, but tragedy strikes when she befriends Mario, a circus clown who gives her advice and friendship, and Zampano kills him in a jealous fit. Zampano eventually leaves Gelsomina, who still loves him, to die on the road. Now, I was not about to let that be the only thing that I read about this, because that is just not enough story for me. So I looked up the movie plot, which tells me slightly more. And by all accounts, the movie plot and the Broadway show plot are fairly intertwined as far as being similar. So in the movie, a young woman named Rosa left her family to become the assistant of a sideshow strongman named Zampano. Upon Rosa's recent death, Zampano... I'm just going to say it a different way each time. Zampano returned to Rosa's family to see about making the same deal for her sister, Gelsomina. In return for 10,000 lire, Gelsomina's mother turns her daughter over to the circus performer and watches as the two depart the very same day. Zampano makes his living on the streets by performing acts of strength in front of crowds, such as breaking an iron chain across his expansive chest and then waiting for the tips to be placed in the hat that is passed around. Zampano's nature is that of a rather frightening brute, while Gelsomina quickly develops into the perfect partner due to her lighthearted and innocent character. She's also described as being somewhat simple, and not just innocent, but, you know, mentally handicapped in a way. Ultimately, he teaches her how to incorporate a snare drum and a trumpet into the act, which requires her to dance a little and also clown a little. Gelsomina is a trusting, naive soul, but she genuinely enjoys performing for the crowds and interacting with Zampano. Nevertheless, the brute nature of the strongman is one that always resorts to intimidation and even frightening coercion to keep Gelsomina under his thumb. At one point, he leaves her stranded in the street as he enjoys a tryst with another woman, and later he uses a switch from a tree to whip her as a punishment for getting her lines wrong.
Oh, dear.
Yes. Such tactics prove to have the opposite effect of those intended. Surprising.
Surprise, surprise.
As Zampano's constant displays of cruelty finally result in a rebellion by Gelsomina and the decision for her to leave the act. The decision puts her on the road, which leads to a town and ultimately to Il Matto, which I believe means the fool, at least in one of the versions that I read it did, who is a high wire clown. Zampano tracks her down and forces her back, and they soon join a traveling circus that just so happens to employ the fool. For reasons he is not fully conscious of, the fool cannot seem to stop from taunting Zampano for his demonstrations of mindlessness. Finally, having enough after being soaked with water from a pail that fool throws at him, Zampano reaches for his knife and chases after the clown. Zampano is temporarily jailed, but they are both fired from the circus. And I imagine that this might be the act break. When the strong man is freed from jail, the fool politely suggests to Gelsomina that perhaps she has other options. Maybe you shouldn't be with this jerk that beats you. He imparts his own personal philosophy, which I know, right? That suggests that everything on Earth, people, animals, and even inanimate objects, exists for a specific and particular purpose. In a telling moment, a nun draws a comparison between her own purpose in serving God and Gelsomina's purpose with Zampano. She goes to the strong man with a proposal of marriage, but is rejected. The strong man and the clown come to one final confrontation when the fool is addressing a flat tire by the side of the road. Gelsomina is aghast at the sight of Zampano's violently striking the fool over the head over and over again. The clown's last moment of lucidity is to observe that his watch is broken, and then he slumps over as mortality takes leave. Zampano has no choice but to push the car off the road, where it finally stops in a fiery crash after he has concealed the clown's body. The murder of the fool has also resulted in the murder of the lively spirit which made Gelsomina so popular with crowds. After 10 days pass without any life coming back into her eyes, Zampano leaves her for good when she takes one of her naps. He leaves her behind with only clothing, the trumpet, and a little money. Years afterward, Zampano is struck by the sound of a woman singing the song that Gelsomina liked to play. It turns out that the woman's father discovered Gelsomina on a beach one day and, out of pity for her looks and manner, took her in, cared for her. But nevertheless, she died soon afterward. A drunk Zampano leaves the woman and heads toward the beach, where he finally begins to cry.
Okay.
That's
the cinematic. Yes. It's very Fellini-esque.
Yes.
That is real artsy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So the characters and the original cast were Bernadette Peters as Gelsomina. And this was one of the first things that she had ever done. I believe it was the first Broadway show that she had ever done. Mm. And if this show had been a success, her career would have started so much faster. Yeah. But we also can't really say that, because maybe it would have dwindled and died.
Right.
You just never know in this business.
You just don't know.
Zampano was played by Stephen Perlman. The mother was Anne Higuera. Mario was played by Larry Kurt. Elsa by Lisa Bellerin. Ava by Marianne Robbins. Sophia by Susan Geppinger. I don't know if that's pronounced right. And Kostra by Lucille Patton. So, Lionel Bart and Chris Curtis produced a concept album of the proposed show in 1967, as I mentioned earlier. That was the demonstration recording, with Madeline Bell as Gelsomina. The musical had out-of-town tryouts at the Fisher Theater in Detroit, Michigan, starting on October 27th in 1969, and La Strada opened on December 14th, 1969, at the L'Enfantin Theater, which I think
Broadway musical
as well. La Strada, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so, and it was after 14 previews, but such is the name of the game here. Today, it only lasted one performance. Mm-hmm. The show was directed by Alan Schneider with choreography by Alvin Ailey and Joyce Trisler. I know.
Wow.
It closed the same night, losing $650,000.
What is that in today's
money? I know, I knew you were going to ask, so I looked it up. $4.5 million.
For one night. Oof.
One night. And that really is astounding to me. So in discussing La Strada's problem, Stephen Susskind, in the book that we have, the other book called?
Second Act Trouble.
That's right.
That's a good one, yeah.
It is a good one. Wrote that Bart apparently did not go to the United States to assist during rehearsals. And neither did the director nor the choreographers had previously done a Broadway musical. Bernadette Peters confirmed that Bart never worked on the show in New York. She says the script really wasn't ready, and Lionel Bart was never... Wait, let me try to do it. The script really wasn't ready, and Lionel Bart was never coming up. I'm really terrible.
That was good. I thought that was a good impression.
Thanks.
Don't stop.
I know, right? Lionel Bart was never coming over. Marty Sharnan and his partner at the time, Lawrence, had to rewrite it. Mm-hmm. So now I'm going to switch over to Ken Mandelbaum's Not Since Carrie, and just read all of the words that he wrote. So, let's see. Okay, So in terms of musical theater, the only major name L'Estrada boasted was its composer-lyricist Lionel Bart, whose Oliver had been a big success on Broadway, and who had several other distinguished London musicals called Blitz and Maggie May, mm-hmm. to his credit. By the time of L'Estrada. Mm. But Bart was also beset by personal demons, and after one big London flop called Twang!
Oh, dear.
In 1965, he was never to be the same. L'Estrada followed the film's screenplay quite closely. Zampano, who travels through southern Italy with his strongman act, buys the simple-minded Gelsomina as his latest concubine slash assistant. Her cloning makes her the star of the act. She falls in love with Zampano, but he treats her terribly, then meets the fool, and he tries to change her mind, and then he's killed, and we all know that story. During the tryout, the musical Zampano, Vincent Beck, was replaced by Stephen Perlman, who opened it on Broadway. In a far more extreme move, however, Bart's score was gradually removed until on opening night, only three of his songs remained.
That's crazy.
I know. The program carried a singular insert. At this performance, additional music and lyrics by Martin Sharnan and Elliot Lawrence, which is why they're listed first instead of... Oh, no, I guess Lionel Bart was listed first in the when I first read that, but that's why they're listed as well.
Hmm.
In fact, Sharnan and Lawrence had written an entirely new score, although Sharnan took no credit in the program proper, and Lawrence, a musical director and orchestrator, was credited in the back of the program as orchestra personnel supervisor. L'Estrada seemed to have abandoned all hope by the time of its Broadway opening, so the negative reviews and one-night run were not a surprise when it lost the $650,000. L'Estrada suffered even more acutely from the problem built into The Yearling because it followed a relentlessly bleak, tragic screenplay. It emerged as one of the most depressing musicals ever. What it lacked was the beauty, compassion, and poetry that Fellini was able to impart to the brutal, unpleasant story. I agree
with
that completely.
That's like what he's so known for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That it's dark and it's horrible, and it's but it's real life. And so even in the darkest of real life,
there's beauty.
Yeah. Yeah. And there is so much beauty in the story to find. You just didn't translate it to the stage.
Yeah.
Do, 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 do. The only hope for the musical L'Estrada would have been in an opera house. And actually, I'm going to agree with Ken on that. It is such a tragic story that if you had put it to an operatic score, I think it would have just been, it would have been brilliant. And it could still actually be really brilliant if they did that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know who's listening, but...
Make it an opera.
Make it an opera. Bernadette Peters, in her first Broadway lead, did not let the show down. If L'Estrada had worked, Peters might not have had to wait a few more years before becoming a top-level musician or musical theater star. The score was not bad, particularly Peters' haunting opening Seagull, Starfish, Pebble, written by Lawrence and Sharnan, but sounding uncannily like Bart, and sooner or later for the unlucky Larry Kurt as Mario. They made, it might be in here. I tend to do this too when I'm reading the story, and I'll interject something and then I'll read it again.
Good.
Because I forgot.
Good.
But there is, someone made a correlation between Oliver and some of the music then that Martin Sharnan and Lawrence put into the music sounding it sounded seamless, they said, to any one of Lionel Bart's songs. Anyone would have thought that, oh, that very well could have been. The celebrated 1930 German film The Blue Angel. Oh, I think that's it.
That's it.
Okay.
So never mind. I didn't repeat myself.
So it very well could have been in what? In Oliver?
In Oliver. Or in any of Lionel Bart's...
other shows.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Any of his retinue of songs.
Mm.
Although bootleg recordings of the score are known to exist, no original cast album was commercially released, which is very sad to me. Two songs from the show were later included on an EP titled Martin Sharnan's mini album, Five Great Songs from Not So Great Shows, which I believe was Bruce Jacko.
Oh, that's funny.
And that was in 1976. One of these songs, Sooner or Later, was performed by Larry Kurt, who had been an original cast member. And also then a recording of Starfish was performed by Judy Kuhn, who I'm in love as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was included in an anthology called Unsung Musicals in 1994.
Yeah.
That is all I got.
Wow.
I couldn't find any more, but it's such, I mean, like, the stuff that I was able to find is really kind of incredible, the bootleg material that they're talking about. It's just audio of Bernadette Peters singing these haunting melodies. But there's one song in particular, and I can't remember what the title of it is right now, but it was Bruce Yeko that gave me the idea. He said that in this particular show, it is the As Long As He Needs Me of the show. I cannot find it anywhere. And I've actually, my vocal coach, Jason Wetzel, I was like, Jason, you got to help me find this. So maybe if you can, I'll find the title and let you know.
Michael Levine. Go to Michael Levine.
You know what? We were talking about that. I'm not sure why.
Michael's got everything.
He does. He doesn't even, all he has to be like is, oh, I think that someone's looking for this piece of music. I'm just going to mail this off.
Yeah. Michael, help.
Yeah. Okay, Michael Levine, I'm going to knock on your door, Michael. I'm a coming for you, Michael, because I really want it in my audition book.
Great.
I do.
Yeah, he did say that. It was the As Long As He Needs Me of that show. Oh,
but it's a song that, you know, nobody has, so nobody knows. And so,
be fresh in the audition room.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think Fellini... There have been four attempts to musicalize his films.
What other shows?
A Sweet Charity.
Oh, of course.
Is based on Knights of Cabiria. Mm-hmm. And then there was this one, which didn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And then there was, there's a wonderful film of his that I really like called Juliet of the Spirits.
Yes.
And Carolyn Lee was working on a version of that, and then she passed, so that never went anywhere. But if you can get your hands on the demo, it's, like, gorgeous.
Okay. Is it called Juliet of the Spirits?
I think it might just be called Juliet.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Nine, which is based on Eight and a Half.
Oh,
yeah.
Of course.
So those are the four that I can think of. Only, one of them did not make it, but three did. So, and Nine and Sweet Charity were huge successes.
Yeah. Very.
And this one, not so much.
No. Well, because I think that they changed it just enough for the stage.
Yeah.
That it could make sense.
Yeah.
And maybe in this version, they just didn't change enough. Or they changed too much. No,
it's
I think they just didn't change it enough.
It is.
It's such, Fellini is visual. It's very visual. It's cinematic. And so in 69, we didn't have the capabilities that we do now with lighting and tech.
It was that Bob Fosse did Charity and Tommy Tune did Nine.
Yeah.
And those are two people that are so visual.
Right. Very
much so. They created their visual vocabulary.
So, but I think Alvin Ailey is also very visual.
Yeah, but if it was Martin directing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, then it's probably him setting the tone of what the whole evening is going to be.
Sense.
I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
And Martin, to me, feels, I think Martin's greatest work is things like Annie, where it's steeped in a realism. There's a musical, but there's still a realism
there.
And I think that's where Martin blossoms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will agree with that.
Just guessing.
There you go.
Just guessing. I wasn't there.
No, you're so right. It's rote now.
Yeah.
It's done.
Done.
That's the true story.
Next topic. Hit the gavel. Move on.
So you're the last show.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, okay.
If you want to. Otherwise, we can just chew the fat more.
No, I'll go fast on this one. Okay, so this is a musical that ran one night, but I think it's a great musical that we need to re-examine at some point because I think it's so funny and nobody ever does it.
Okay.
So it has a very interesting history. It played one night on May 3rd, 1981, and the show is called The Mooney Shapiro Songbook.
Yes, this was on the list.
Was it on the list too?
It was on the list.
I want to hear all about it, though.
Okay, so I just think this show is hysterical, and I think it was a little ahead of its time. Mm-hmm. And I think if it was done now, it probably, like, if it was in a tiny little off-Broadway theater or at Laurie Beachman or somewhere, I think it would really blossom. So the Mooney Shapiro Songbook was written by a guy named Monty Norman and a guy named Julian Moore, and it played in London in 1979, and it was such a hit in London, it won the Olivier Award for Best Musical.
Nice.
Wow.
Hal Prince saw it in London and loved it and told everybody about it and literally dragged all of his when it decided it was going to come to New York, dragged all of his friends to like every single preview, and he was like, isn't this amazing? And every single friend was like, what is this? Like, what
didn't
is
understand.
This?
Like, who are you? Are you really talented?
Really, Hal? Really? So The Mooney Shapiro's songbook is about a fictional man who never existed, a composer and lyricist and actor named Mooney Shapiro. And what the musical was, it was a parody of all those bio musicals that were out in the 70s. So things like it was making fun of Side by Side by Sondheim and Ain't Misbehavin' and like that Frank Lesser review, because there were all these reviews celebrating these composers. Yeah. So these Norman, Monty and Julian created a fictional person, and you follow his biography. And it was a group of like five singers, like in tuxedos and evening gowns, who would like tell the story of who this man was and then sing songs from his repertoire. And then they would then there was there's an actor who's still around who's amazing named Timothy Jerome, who actually played Mooney Shapiro. And you would see him like in scenes and stuff, and they did a lot of like Forrest Gump things where like they imposed his head on like other people's photos and stuff. And Hal Prince loved it so much that he recorded a voiceover at the beginning of the show saying, "Hi, I'm Hal Prince. And one of the greatest regrets of musical theater is that Mooney Shapiro never really made it." Aww. So he created like this. So so even Hal Prince is like in on the joke and he loved it.
So
the original cast to me is amazing because it was Timothy Jerome, like I just mentioned, Gary Beach. From the producers. Judy Kay, two-time Tony Award winner, the great Judy Kay. And is that right? Did I get that right? Oh, yeah. And then, of course, surprise, Jeff Goldblum.
Oh.
Jeff Goldblum
like
was
a
in
little,
it. Yeah, Jeff Goldblum did a couple of musicals. directed and choreographed by George Faison, who got fired from a Broadway musical. So George is back now.
Amazing.
The show only ran one night. I think what happened was critics at the time and audiences at the time were really enjoying these biopic musicals.
Yeah.
And because they hadn't had them before. Mm-hmm. So they were enjoying the Sondheim and they were enjoying the Cole Porter and the Gershwin. And
now we're sick of them.
And now we're sick of them. So now I think
they were just a little too late.
Yeah. In a world of like that and like those jukebox musicals and stuff, I think so. The music is very funny. The book is very clever. It's licensed through Samuel French. So if like you're a community theater and you're looking for something fun to do, take a look at the Mooney Shapiro songbook. And I hope it comes back at some point because I think it's really a lot of fun.
It's really relevant because like that's all we're doing. Right. Like we're just doing so many reviews and so many jukebox musicals.
Yeah. So this would fit perfectly.
Yeah.
Fit perfectly. So I'm hoping that that'll come back at some point.
Yeah.
The other three that we mentioned today, I don't know if that's going to, we're going to see.
No.
I can't imagine that we're going to see.
We're not going to see
Aloha, a musical celebration.
Aloha, the spectacular new musical.
That's it.
Well, I mean, all you really have to do is name your musical, whatever it is, : a spectacular new musical.
Yeah.
And people will
either
come or not come.
Well, it's spectacular. Yeah. We should go see that.
Yeah. So those were mine. So I'm doing Mooney Shapiro on behalf of Kevin, who was supposed to be here. So that's it. I've done two.
So
Mooney
fun.
Mooney Shapiro. That would be a fun, like, off-center, like, something.
I think so.
What was the theater that Cagney played at?
The West Side.
Like a theater like that's just small enough but also big enough.
I think it needs to be like in a tiny space. When it was on Broadway.
With a
proscenium.
What am I talking about?
Yeah.
We knew what you meant. I know. They have no idea.
We're hitting the magic hour where I'm almost asleep.
No, I get it. I totally get it. Yeah, I think it played the Morosco Theater originally. But that's big. I think any Broadway house. There are some shows that just should stay off Broadway. Because they work effectively.
We've talked about a lot of shows that Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson was one of the ones that I can think of right now.
Title of show,
absolutely.
Disaster.
Because there are so many of them that are so good, and they're so good in their off-Broadway theaters. And as soon as they make the jump, it's so difficult recoup that. Well, it feels weird, but also, you know, you could be having the same number of people come to see your show, but the house is double the size.
Yeah.
So you're just not going to be able to get it back.
No. And there's some that I'm happy like never came to Broadway because they could. I mean, the Fantastics easily could have been like, hey, guys, we're the biggest tourist trap in town.
Yeah.
We're moving into a Broadway. They never did it.
I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah.
Either.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's done like high school. I mean, it's done everywhere, too.
That's one that
everybody would know.
I think that's important. I think I think it's good to celebrate intimate spaces as well. And there's not always the pressure to move into a large house.
There's definitely a place. Well, we're in this era of corporate theater, which everyone thinks of being enormous and larger than life and spectacular. I mean, that's the word that's put to a lot of these new musicals.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't have to be that way.
No. But I also hear from some producers that even though they know that a show should stay off Broadway, mm-hmm. the reason that they move it to Broadway is then that way when they license it, the licensing company can say direct from Broadway.
Okay.
Even they know that it's going to lose money on Broadway, but they know it's going to make a lot of money in their regional community theater.
I'll give them that.
I mean, my preference is the artistic side more than the financial side, but I'm also not investing any money, so I got no say at this point. Yeah. Well, thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh, thank you for coming.
This was such a blast, and I'm so I hope it was worth the 8-month wait.
It was.
Absolutely.
No, you both do such a great job, and what you do is absolutely incredible. So, like, what's next for both of you?
We will be recording an episode of Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, where we both talk about that show. It'll be very good.
Great.
I wonder, we might have to talk about if we're actually going to put it for this season, though, because we haven't had time to read the book.
You know, honestly, at this point, I'm thinking that maybe Pretty Belle should be the last one of the season, and then this should be our next season opener.
Oh,
and, like,
my
by
gosh.
Season, I think we've done 3 seasons this year.
That's amazing. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm the start of the season. That's amazing. You can only go up from here. I got that.
No, it's our springboard.
Oh, yeah. It's a spring. Okay. I like that. All right. I'm going to go that way.
It's our exercise trampoline, if you will.
Oh, I like that.
What about you guys? Who are you interviewing next?
Let's see. I know tomorrow we post an episode, and our episode is with John Lee Beatty, the set designer.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And then this week we're interviewing... Oh, boy. We're interviewing. I know this because we have 3 on Wednesday, and I got to know. Oh, we're interviewing a press agent named Josh Ellis, who was David Merrick's press agent.
Oh, so I can't wait to listen to that
stories.
Episode.
He should have stories.
Ooh, will you please ask him?
Yeah.
Because the whole idea, Rebecca, there was this second scandal within the scandal that happened with the press agent. Can you just get his input on that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I'll ask him, then I'll text you and be like, this is what he said.
We had very definite idea. My opinion on that is that if you are a press agent, you don't get to say anything. And if you feel that way about... Okay, so I'm sorry. Now, if you didn't listen to the episode of Rebecca, maybe I should explain it. So basically, Mark Thibodeau was a press agent for Rebecca, but also for Phantom, like big shows that he's done.
Yeah.
He was the one that sent an anonymous email to an angel investor that would have come in at the last minute to save Rebecca, saying, don't put your money in here. It's going to fail. It's going to be awful. You should not have any part of this at all. So when they found out that it was Mark Thibodeau, then Ben Sprecher and Rebecca LLC or whatever it is, then sued Mark Thibodeau saying it was breach of contract and also breach of trust, but also that he had no place doing that. So anyway, my opinion on it is that if your job is to maintain a certain level of secrecy for your client, then that's what you need to do. And if you have that opinion that this should not be happening, that this is fraud, that it needs to be told, then you need to quit first and then tell.
Yeah, I'm on the second part of that because otherwise you're accepting money. I mean, you are getting paid to promote something that you know is not going to work.
Yeah.
And if you don't believe in the product,
absolutely,
you need to leave. And yes, you know, you take things because you need to pay the rent, but that's ridiculous.
No, I couldn't even fathom. But also, like, he was saying that Ben Sprecher was somehow involved in the fraud that was happening, which was not the case at all.
Yeah, because he just so wanted it to happen. He just was like, he was like a kid who saw a show he loved and wanted to do whatever he could to make it come to Broadway.
Yeah, that happens. But no, I don't think the press agent has any right to disseminate their opinion like that. And
absolutely.
If you feel that strongly that you're preventing people from investing, then maybe you need to leave and go to the proper authorities.
Absolutely.
And not just tell people on the sly.
Right.
But I'll ask Josh about that. So we have Josh and then Debbie Gravett. Who won the Tony Award for Jerome Robbins Broadway and has had this amazing concert career. She's our second guest. And then the third is an album producer named Robert Shear, who I think actually
that
did...
Sound familiar.
Yeah, he's done a bunch of albums and stuff. Okay. But one of his big things is getting back a lot of recordings of shows that were not successful the first time or have never really been preserved entirely. I want to tell you what he's working on. I don't know if it's on the record or off the record.
Oh, okay. You can tell us once the mics are off.
I'll tell you this. It's a musical that has had a couple of different incarnations, and he's currently working on a 2-CD set that would record all of the music.
Oh, that's cool.
So that way there's a historical record of it.
2-CD sets were my jam growing up.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
And if it only had one seat, I was like, where's the rest of the show?
What's the point? No, so I don't, I'll find out if that's public record. And if it is, I'll tell you and you can tell everybody.
Can you do Shuffle Along? Yeah. Like, can he get...
I wish. We were just talking about how there's no cast recording.
Well, and this has been mentioned a lot. I mean, this is one of the big laments that we talk about every time. Mm-hmm. It's like, if they don't make a cast recording... Yes, it might have been a flop, but there's still so so much information that we want to keep now.
Yeah. Shuffle
50 years later, 100 years later.
I mean, Shuffle, I wouldn't necessarily call a flop. Like, we don't really understand what happened.
No, I mean, that story is
amazing. That's going to be one that gets worked out for years and years and years. But no, I mean, the thing that disappoints me the most on Shuffle Along is the fact that it takes at least four of the greatest African-American performers that are working in the industry who were especially Brian and Audra, who are such trailblazers.
Yeah.
And not to have those performances recorded is just a little baffling to me.
Did they do like a Lincoln Center, like a PBS recording or anything? I mean, it's so sad to me.
We were talking about beforehand, which is, you know, thank God so many shows now are getting recorded and being put out there either on Broadway HD or in, you know, Fathom events, I think.
Or you know what? Thank God for some of the bootleggers, because otherwise we would not have
some of this.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I try never to disparage a bootlegger.
No.
I really don't. Especially
sometimes you won't have anything.
Yeah.
You're not going to have anything. And their performances were great. And it was Savion Glover's choreography was fabulous.
Yes,
it was.
And the fact that it has not been preserved in any way, shape, or form, except Ebony and I were talking beforehand. You know, I think there's this soundboard recording.
Okay.
And there was a discussion at one point that the soundboard recording would be released commercially.
Wow.
Because apparently, I haven't heard it, but apparently it sounds of a high quality.
Let's get it done.
So the other thing we were talking about before we went on the air is my hope is that maybe in 5 or 10 years they do an original cast reunion.
Yes.
And that gets recorded.
That would be amazing.
I just wish that it was filmed for future generations to take a look at it, because it's the show that they're talking about is such an important milestone.
Right.
And this show in our history is capturing some really brilliant performers at the top of their game.
And then you've got eight months pregnant doing Bat Maz across the stage.
Yeah, that was impressive.
Face. You know, and now, like, Brandon Victor Dixon's been nominated for an Emmy Award.
Oh, they've all gone on to the people back then who were you were like, who are you, are now.
Well, I mean, he's probably the only one I saw he was in the Wild Party, I think, the concert at New York City Center.
Yeah.
So I saw him there, so I knew who he was when he got in. And Joshua, I loved already.
Yes.
And then, of course, Audra, and of course, Brian. And then, of course, oh, gosh, help me.
Who?
Iggy Boots.
Oh, Billy Porter?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this was a fantastic...
The cast was Adrian Warren. This cast was ridiculous.
And even the ensemble. Yeah. Even the ensemble had really blossomed since the show closed. It's not licensed for professional or amateur productions. Yeah. So who knows? There was no tour. It never went to the West End. I don't know what's going to happen next. And unfortunately, it might be just one of those things that lives in all of our memories.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because we won't be able to pass it on to future generations.
Well, we can watch the Tony episode over and over again.
No,
it's so good.
Yeah, and like you were saying before, Ebony, before we went on the air, the idea that the last line of the show and the last moment of the show is about, you know, will you be remembered, and people fading away. And unfortunately, that's what's happening to this show.
It's true.
And so I don't know what there is to do to counteract it. But it would be good to get them all into a recording session. But Shuffle Along is not the show that he's working on. I wish it was.
Say something to him.
We all wish that, but I think Scott Rudin has all the rights to how all that works. So we'll see. But I'm hoping that one day we'll get to see it again.
Especially because all that work George did.
Oh my gosh! No kidding.
The years he spent.
Yeah. Yeah, working on that was incredible. That was really incredible. And a coffee table book, anything. We'll take anything at this point.
I know.
We'll take anything at this point. It was really fun. I just did the 40th anniversary concert of UB at 54
last
week.
Yes, I saw that.
With the original cast, which was awesome.
Nice.
But they were telling me that UB Blake was alive when they were working on the show.
Oh,
so
that's
he used
neat.
To come and, you know, tell stories and stuff. And he told a lot of stories about... You know, Shuffle Along, the original, we know, but the original Shuffle Along.
Very cool.
So I'm hoping that it's such a seminal moment in musical theater history that I'm hoping
it gets.
You know, there have been books on Showboat, there have been books on Oklahoma.
It's also a seminal moment in Black history.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like we there's so much talk about like all of the terrible things that happened to us, and America doesn't talk enough about all that blacks have given to our country. And like this, I mean, this was huge. Like this show was so huge, and I just feel like we need to really preserve the wonderful, gorgeous things that we have contributed to American society. And this is just like one of them. And it's just upsetting to me that, again, we, you know, it just gets forgotten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So hopefully somebody out there either has enough money to get a recording going or
a Kickstarter.
A Kickstarter. I think that would be successful, actually.
I bet if they did a Kickstarter, I bet you there'd be money. To be honest with you, I think if you did a Kickstarter, the money would probably be raised within 3 days.
Oh, yeah.
But I think there's rights issues that none of us are aware of.
Yeah.
So I know that the money's there, but the legality might not
be. Well, you would have to do it to where each of the people that gave would be producers. Like it would have to be set up to be.
Yeah, and they do that all the time now because a lot of people do solo albums.
Yeah.
Well, and they also did the Jesus Christ Superstar, the female one. That was a Kickstarter.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's doable. I think there are some legal things that are preventing a lot of this from occurring.
They were still in litigation in December. I told Rob I had seen, so.
Who was in litigation? Was it?
Well, it was about exactly what you said about the whole like blaming Audra for the closing of it.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's like some lawsuits that were going on. And
okay. Well, maybe another episode for another
time. That's a whole nother episode. Yeah.
Well, we brushed on it when we did the episode of Shuffle Along, but we didn't. I mean, it's still ongoing. So
crazy.
Okay.
Well, this
was
fun.
Thank you so much for being
here.
Yeah,
I want to talk all day, but
we'll do this again, I'm
okay.
sure.
Okay, I got to go home and edit my podcast.
When
we're all very good at talking.
yes, we are.
And maybe next time, Kevin, you won't run to the woods.
Yes. This was so much fun. Thank you so much for having me. Hopefully I'll come back sometime.
Yeah, please. You're welcome anytime.
Yeah.
Yay,
bye.
Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.